The Shah believes that our deserts were once fertile plains and lush forests. At least, that's what he claims. During Alexander the Great's reign, according to this theory, vast armies swept across these lands, traveling with millions of goats and sheep. The animals ate all the grass and other vegetation. The disappearance of these plants caused a drought, and eventually the entire region became a desert. Now, all we have to do, or so the Shah says, is plant millions upon millions of trees. After that, presto, the rains will return, and the desert will bloom again. Of course, in the process, we will have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. He smiled condescendingly. Companies like yours will reap huge profits. I take it you don't believe in this theory. The desert is a symbol. Turning it green is about much more than agriculture. Several waiters descended upon us with trays of beautifully presented Iranian food. Asking my permission first, Yaman proceeded to select an assortment from the various trays. Then he turned back to me. A question for you, Mr. Perkins, if I might be so bold. What destroyed the cultures of your own native peoples, the Indians? I responded that I felt there had been many factors, including greed and superior weapons. Yes, true, all of that. But more than anything else, did it not come down to a destruction of the environment? He went on to explain how once forests and animals such as the buffalo are destroyed, and once people are moved onto reservations, the very foundations of cultures collapse. You see, it is the same here, he said. The desert is our environment. The Flowering Desert Project threatens nothing less than the destruction of our entire fabric. How can we allow this to happen? I told him that it was my understanding that the whole idea behind the project came from his people. He responded with a cynical laugh, saying that the idea was planted in the Shah's mind by my own United States government, and that the Shah was just a puppet of that government. A true Persian would never permit such a thing, Yaman said. Then he launched into a long dissertation about the relationship between his people, the Bedouins, and the desert. He emphasized the fact that many urbanized Iranians take their vacations in the desert. They set up tents large enough for the entire family and spend a week or more living in them. We, my people, are part of the desert. The people the Shah claims to rule with that iron hand of his are not just of the desert. We are the desert. After that, he told me stories about his personal experiences in the desert. When the evening was over, he escorted me back to the tiny door in the large wall. My taxi was waiting in the street outside. Yaman shook my hand and expressed his appreciation for the time I had spent with him. He again mentioned my young age and my openness and the fact that my occupying such a position gave him hope for the future. I am so glad to have had this time with a man like you. He continued to hold my hand in his. I would request of you only one more favor. I do not ask this lightly. I do it only because, after our time together tonight, I know it will be meaningful to you. You'll gain a great deal from it. What is it I can do for you? I would like to introduce you to a dear friend of mine, a man who can tell you a great deal about our King of Kings. He may shock you, but I assure you that meeting him will be well worth your time.